Okay, dude, give yourself a test.
Boom shakalaka laka, boom shakalaka laka, okay. Boom.
We're recording?
We are recording.
That's fantastic. Welcome to Mustard Ayonnaise. I'm Matt.
And I am Richard.
And we seem to already be a little off our game.
Exactly.
That's all right. I'm well rested today.
Good.
Good times for me. All right.
I am not so, but I'm sure I'll plow through.
You know, I would ask, but people don't care. A couple corrections from last week. We were talking about the PS3.
Mm-hmm.
Two different price points for the PlayStation 3.
Oh, that's right.
And you thought it was $400 and $500. No, it's $500 and $600.
Yeah, Jesus.
And then I thought maybe that what the 500 edition was missing was HTPC. I was so off because that's like a PC thing.
HDMI.
Yeah, you were right. It's HDMI that the lower one is missing, which is, as people have pointed out, if the PlayStation 3 is supposed to be future-proof, as Sony is saying, they're leaving off an HDMI port. That's completely retarded. Because what that means is, in order to see HD, high definition, coming out of this thing, you have to use a component control.
Yep.
And so if you're going to watch Blu-ray movies, it's in all likelihood the studios are going to control the rights management and will downsample the resolution, which means if you watch HD movies through the components, you're seeing maybe a quarter of the actual information there.
Well, to some extent through component video, or particularly if it's like through SVHS, it's actually a practical thing. It's not downsampling. It just simply...
No. It's got nothing to do with the actual connectors, because the component HD quality signal is about equal with HDMI, but it has to do with the rights management. And so that what it actually does is it purposefully downgrades the signal that it sends through the component outputs. I don't know if that's
again,
what you were starting to say.
Once again, big companies deciding for us how we get to, enjoy the
which is retarded enough as it is.
Yeah.
But for Sony to do this with the PlayStation 3 on the lower end model, it's baffling.
I just think that it portends to this being a disaster. I think the price is a disaster. I cannot believe they're charging as much as they're charging for this. It just seems to me that Microsoft is going to destroy them. I mean, it just seems to me, because they've had maybe a better product, but they're just, I don't know. It just seems
and
to me
from
Microsoft
everything I've seen
thing.
From developers talking about it and all this sort of inside baseball stuff about the boxes themselves, they're really about equal in terms of their playing games. The game quality is going to be about equal in terms of, like, Microsoft has a better graphics card in there. Sony cell processors are maybe a little better, but in the end, it all kind of washes out.
So one is a lot more expensive with weird proprietary stuff, and the other one is cheaper, and it's got a year leap to have a bunch more games in the pipeline.
And not only that, everyone expects Microsoft to drop the Xbox 360 price by $100 when PlayStation comes out in November.
Yeah.
So there's
which
that.
Which is when I'll be buying mine.
That's probably when I'm getting mine, too. Although
Oh, you don't have one?
No, I don't. Well, A, I don't have an HD TV.
Yeah.
There's a couple of games I would get, but there's really nothing. I don't have to have it. Although, yesterday at Costco, I finally saw a pack, and it's like the first time I've actually seen one that I could buy.
Yeah.
In terms of the supply finally being caught up to the demand. And I thought about it, especially, I basically spent what the pack cost on a lawnmower yesterday.
Yeah.
So yesterday was kind of an expensive day already.
Well, I saw like this trailer from E3 for this Rainbow Six game. Rainbow Six, this time it's in Las Vegas. The anti-terrorist unit is in Las Vegas, which is just an excuse to show amazing graphics. And they're flying over the city in a helicopter, and you're looking at the Vegas Lab Forum. It's perhaps the most stunning thing I've ever seen. And it's the first time I've ever seen graphics on a console that is equal or better than what I've seen on the PC. Because PC graphics are always incredibly better, but here for once it's like, wow, nope, that's just blowing me away. That is incredible.
And that's great. I mean, one of the reasons I never got into PC gaming was, aside from the fact that I've been a Mac guy forever, clearly in order to play the latest games, you generally need some completely retarded video card. Completely retarded meaning it's like $700, $800. Now, granted, you can play most things with a a quote-unquote regular video card, but there are times when you're like, in order to play the hottest game, you need this hottest video card that costs an arm and a leg.
Yep.
And I've always kind of felt like that was a, you know, you get on this treadmill and you get sucked in, and before you know it, you're every couple of years shelling out a ridiculous amount of money for a new video card. And if you're into that, that's great, but I was never that hardcore into it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what consoles do is it freezes the platform, and you don't need to upgrade your console to play a new game, which is nice.
You know, that this brings up, I remember now what the other thing I want to talk about was.
Let's just talk about that now then, shall
okay,
we?
It's the Toshiba HD DVD player. Okay, this is the only, actually there's two. There's their lower end $500 unit, and there's one with a few bells and whistles that's $800. This is the one that all the stores stupidly sold out of. They didn't have a working model, but it's the base unit. And I was reading a review in the New York Times yesterday, and they're basically saying it sucks. The picture quality is just plain stunning. They're saying it's better than any over-the-air broadcast HD content. It's just incredible. But they're saying that, first off, the thing is a behemoth. Second of all,
it does look pretty large.
And it's got a fan on it, but they're saying it literally takes a minute to start up. As it goes through its computer algorithms, it's taking a minute to start up. And then the one thing they were pointing out was that they're showing the remote, and the remote is one of those remotes that you get. You know, if you ever buy, like, I don't know if you have like a spare bedroom and you buy like a little $30 DVD player, and it comes with this generic remote where every single button is laid out in a grid, so there's no way tactily to tell whether you're hitting start, stop, play, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what they did with this remote. It's a horrible remote. And I'm thinking, you know, they delayed the release of this. They had that technology done years ago, like literally a year and a half ago, and they were waiting on it. How in that year and a half could they not like send it into product development and get some user feedback on creating a better unit? That's what just stuns me.
I don't know.
So it just, after all that waiting, it just surprised me, but it's still kind of within my price point. Still thinking about it.
Well, and just to briefly go back to, you're talking about PlayStation being a disaster.
Yeah.
And everyone's put, I don't know. I wonder how much of it will hinge on gameplay and how much of it will hinge on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're getting a Blu-ray player for $600 or $500 versus a standalone Blu-ray player being $1,000. And then you have to wonder, anybody that's going to buy a first-generation Blu-ray player is smart enough to realize they can get the same thing from a PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
Are they cannibalizing the player sales by doing this? Because who, I mean, normal people are not going to buy a Blu-ray player standalone at that price point.
Yeah, because you have it the functionality in another machine.
I'm saying people that know that would want that, a leading edge adopter is going to know enough to realize they don't need to get to spend that much money.
Yep.
So I find that fascinating. I haven't really even put a lot of thought into that aspect of it. But as I'm sitting here talking about it, what are they thinking? They're completely cannibalizing their initial player sales.
Yeah.
You know, that's insane.
The other thing I find interesting is how Nintendo has just given up on that market. They've decided we're going in a different direction. But
before we get into Nintendo for a second, I do want to hear what you have to say.
No problem.
But I'm thinking of something else about something to realize about Sony is so much of their profit is now coming from the PlayStation division.
Yeah.
Which, when you think about it, when did it start? Like 10 years ago was the first PlayStation?
Something like that. It was like 96 or
something. I honestly don't remember because I've never had one.
Yep.
But it sort of came out of nowhere. It's like Sony's making a game machine.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And it's based on a DVD, you know, a CD.
Because it was like, well, that's weird. And then they did a phenomenal job. And they launched themselves into this space. And between the PlayStation and the PlayStation 2, did a phenomenal job.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
The last time I saw some sort of report on the profit that Sony makes, most of the profit was coming from the gaming division.
Yeah.
And so a huge amount is riding on the PlayStation 3 for the company as a whole.
I know.
Anyway, you were going to say something.
Well,
about
I was
going to
say about the Revolution. They've changed it now. It's not even the Revolution.
That's on my list.
It's the most horrible.
On my list to talk about.
Well, okay, you want to talk about it now?
Well, I don't want to cut you off.
Well, I was just going to say they changed the name to just perhaps the worst name ever, the Wii.
W-I-I.
Which I don't even know what it's a reference to. Maybe Wi-Fi, maybe whatever.
It's a couple of different things, apparently. One of them is it's supposed to make you, it's a fuzzy let's all be together and play games together kind of thing. along with some other crap, which I don't remember. Like, the eyes kind of look like the controller.
Yeah.
But
it sounds terrible when you say it. It just sounds...
It sounds like... I mean, I can see where they're coming from, but it sounds like they completely failed to investigate what that word would mean in the American market.
You know, it sounds like urination or something, or French, or who knows what. It just sounds weird.
It doesn't sound... Not that you need to sound serious,
yeah.
Because PlayStation, you know, play fun station serious, or Xbox 360, you know, it's kind of a serious name. Those are serious names. Wii. I'm gonna go play on my Wii. Yeah. I'm gonna play with. I mean, the potential for messing and just we could do 30 minutes on just riffing on how retarded that name is. But you really have to wonder. How did nobody say, you know, that's gonna be a tough play in the U.S. market?
Yeah,
and so you're looking at, you know, Nintendo's sort of been, they've been aiming for the younger market in games. They've, you know, both between the GameCube, and their portable division's been doing
the different ones. And even when they release something that isn't even really that great of a product, it still does unbelievably well.
GameCube, I don't think, has done unbelievably well.
I'm talking about the Pocket.
The Game Boy Advance and the DS.
Exactly. And the DS is, near as I can tell, just kind of a cheesy little thing, but it...
People really like them.
Exactly. You know, it's a weird setup and a weird design. Well, in this particular case, first of all, they changed it from Revolution, which I thought Revolution was a great name, but ideally, it's not the greatest name to describe their product, because these other consoles are clearly, in some respects, more revolutionary. But they got the new controller, and apparently the price points can be like $150 or $200.
Yeah, pretty cheap.
So they're simply just going for a different niche. And to some extent, I'm thinking, well, maybe that's the smart thing to do. I mean, if you
for Nintendo, it absolutely is.
Because I'll sit there. I mean, I know there's actually tons of games I play that don't even remotely tax my heavy-duty processor on my computer, and I'll just play them forever. And I think to some extent they're going for that. They're focusing on massively great gameplay and not on everything else. I don't know. And plus, you know, when it comes down to Christmas, I mean, $500 and $400, that's a lot of money for a Christmas present.
That's without games.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I'm saying without. Yeah. So even with games, you're talking about $600, $700 you're going to have to invest in your kids, when suddenly $250 with a game is maybe more conducive. So anyway.
That's a good point. But yeah, it's just, and it's funny because I was listening to the Penny Arcade podcast again on my way over, and it's the one where they're talking about the Wii.
Yeah.
And talking about, you know, one of the guys was saying, I don't like it when they focus group something into a gray paste.
Yeah.
But maybe this one could have used a little more focus grouping.
Yeah.
But, I'm sure it seemed like a good idea in Japan.
Yeah, it sounds like the new, the new slogan for the state of Washington, say wah. Have you heard that?
Oh, that's not the new slogan. That's like a tourism campaign.
Yeah, the tourism campaign. That's right. The tourism campaign, which you read it and you just instantly roll your eyes and go, oh, what were they thinking? And that's kind of like, so you know people spend a lot of money and time and energy, but somehow they got into a certain track and they could not be dissuaded from that. And I think the Wii might be like that. The Wii thing, for me, it's just weird. It seems so late in the game, though, because we've been hearing about Revolution for so long.
Well, and, you know, people have brought up maybe there was a copyright thing, because Revolution was the code name.
Yeah.
And people sort of, you know, just assumed that that would be the end name. And, you know, I was fine with it. I didn't think it was all that great, but I didn't think it was bad.
Yeah.
But suddenly they switched from Revolution to Wii, and it's jolting.
Well, needless to say, there's probably not many copyright infringements with the Wii.
No.
Anyway, we should move on.
We have pounded that into the ground. Let's maybe talk about Poseidon, opened this week.
So what did you think of Poseidon? I did not get a chance to see it yet.
I am sorry. We were going to see it, and then...
Wait, so what happened again? I'd forgotten we were going to see it. That was the problem.
Well, wow. I don't feel guilty at all.
You shouldn't. I just forgot.
I didn't know my girlfriend wanted to see it, and I actually got out of work early on Friday, which never happens.
Yep.
And so she's like, hey, let's go see Poseidon. She emailed me, let's go see Poseidon. And I'm like, okay.
Dude, you never have to worry about seeing something with your girlfriend instead of me.
Oh, it's such a cliche. Like, oh, I was going to go have fun with the guys, but I'm going to go be with now. Anyway, there's two things to talk about in terms of Poseidon for me: the movie itself and the movie-going experience.
Okay.
So first, the movie itself, I liked it. It was, It was exactly what I was led to believe it would be.
Cool. Big, dumb, a lot of chases, a lot of...
It wasn't explosions. That dumb. Parts of it were dumb.
Yep.
You know, it's been... I haven't read any reviews. I've just heard Jeffrey Wells's advance. You know, it's a summer movie. Wolfgang Peterson spends no time on character development, and really you don't want him to.
Yeah.
So
although several of the reviews have pointed out this
they've
is terrible.
Taken the opposite tack.
Because how come that's what made the first movie so wonderful? I'm thinking, have they seen the first movie in any recent time?
Ugh,
it's a terrible movie.
It's really bad.
And all that character element is the worst thing. And it's kind of funny. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Clearly Peterson made the right decision, but you know, somebody's taking them to task for it.
You know, and so there were a couple of groaners. I mean, granted, the whole thing, you know, suspension of disbelief is always tricky with a movie like this. But there's a couple of things, like in the end where the survivors are jumping off the boat. Oh, look, there's an inflatable life raft 20 feet away, and it's the only one.
How convenient.
That was a bit of a groaner.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few others, but generally, as they're making their way through this ship, I mean, it's pretty relentless. It's go, go, go.
Yep.
You know, I was on board with it, you know, and the things that they did, the things they had to do, you know, there's a little bit too much, like Josh Lucas's character knows a little too much about boats. You know, oh, apparently he's in the Navy and that's how they explain it. And you're like, okay.
I know a lot of people in the Navy, they don't know all the intricacies.
You know, talking about ballast tanks and how there's a pressure hatch and, yeah. You know, you're just like, okay, that seems a little convenient that he knows that. The fact that there was a kid in the group was just irritating. It felt like, you know, I keep hitting my sunglasses. Let's hit every demo possible. Let's get a gay guy in there. Let's get a minority in there. Let's get a woman in there. Can we have a minority woman? Let's think about that. Where's black guy? You know, it's like when Stephen Colbert did the Democratic at the Democratic convention, got every single stereotype together and said, black guy, what do you think about gay guy? Which was just hysterical. And that's a little bit what the group felt like.
Yeah.
And the kid wasn't too irritating, but you're just like, oh, I don't. Da, da, da.
Did they? And the name of the ship was Poseidon.
It was Poseidon.
See, I mean, that to me is a big red flag because there was like a big movie 30 years ago with a ship called Poseidon that rolled over and died in the ocean. Why would they name a new ship Poseidon?
Well, I was half-heartedly expecting a Titanic reference, but I don't know. It's hard to do that without cheating your audience.
But was it exciting and generally fun?
I thought so.
Yeah.
Couple disappointments. Andre Brower, I didn't even realize he was the captain.
Oh, yeah.
And he has very little to do in the movie.
Yeah.
You're kind of expecting a little more Andre Brower from the trailer, but basically there's nothing.
That's too bad.
Like, I didn't realize he was the captain until much longer than it should have been.
Oh, really?
I thought he was like the MC on the stage because
huh.
He's introducing the starlet anyway. And there was also a little bit in terms of like the ship miraculously tilts the way they need it to tilt so that they can get down this one hallway. And the ship miraculously, you know, is a little too much miraculous this instead of, I think it would have been a little more plausible if this ship didn't need, like, the characters weren't dependent on outside circumstances in order to progress to the next point. I thought that was a little too much of a, oh, come on.
So the movie was like 90 minutes long, though, right? It wasn't very long.
It was pretty short.
And they spent like $200 million on this movie. So on a per dollar basis, it's probably, you know, we're talking about like $1.5 million a minute. That's an incredible amount for money.
It looked great.
Did it?
I saw one bitch that the wave looked a little fake, but really you could, one thing I kept thinking throughout the whole thing was this must have been a bitch to film.
Really?
A water film. You've got all these complications that come with shooting with water.
Peterson seems to love, I mean, of course he,
that's he all filmed, he does is water.
I know
films
he filmed the greatest one of all time, which is Das Boot. And he filmed, Perfect Storm, which is a pretty great movie. And so this one, so he's got the niche down pat.
It kind of made me wonder what because for a while he was attached to Superman versus Batman.
Jeez.
That would have been interesting.
He's a terrible a director with actors. He's just more of a let's create big machinations because the movies themselves can be kind of creaky. I'll be interested to know how this movie does internationally. It didn't do well this weekend. It made $20 million, which is horrible. But his last movie, Troy, was supposedly a big flop here, but Troy actually made...
I don't think it was a flop here, but it underperformed.
And to the tune of, it made like $150 million, and they thought, this is going to be the biggest thing ever. Well, internationally, altogether, the thing made over $600 million.
Which is insane, because it was not that good a movie.
That's the funny thing. And so I'm looking at this, and I'm going, what is it? And of course, what the people say it is, it's because it has Brad Pitt in it and Eric Bana, especially Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt is huge internationally.
Right.
So he does a movie here that is basically like Troy, a big-time movie, but no big-time stars. So I wonder how it'll perform internationally, because he doesn't have Brad Pitt anchoring the thing.
Oh, and actually, most of the performances were good, but Kevin Dillon,
yeah,
Matt Dillon's brother,
yep.
Oh, horrible.
Really?
And I
like him in Entourage.
I've never seen Entourage. I hear it's good.
Yeah.
I think it's partly because of the way the character was written. It's this just, it's a cartoonish character. This over-the-top, sleazy playboy, just, oh. And his performance was just grating.
Really?
And I don't know how much of it's Kevin Dillon and how much of it's the way that character was written, but that was irritating. Yeah. Anyway.
So now the movie-going experience.
Oh, that's right. Thank you for reminding me. I was all set to move on.
You're welcome.
We saw it at the Bellevue Galleria. You ever been there?
Wait, is that that's the one where you have to pay to park in it and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there many times.
Many times?
Yep.
Used to be Tower Records there, the new one.
Yeah, the new Tower Records is
which
there.
Is now gone, and it's an LA Fitness.
Really?
Yeah, that surprised me. I was like, wow. I'll kill time at the Tower.
Yeah, no, I saw Dick there. I saw a couple other movies. But I've
last
seen
thing I saw there was Being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
So it was a while. Yeah, but it's sort of in downtown Bellevue, and downtown Bellevue is becoming more and more of a pain in the ass to park.
I know. It's like the first place I remember ever having to pay to park. It threw me the first time I saw a movie.
Fortunately,
there.
I scored street parking. Which was nice. Anyway, I didn't realize this. Bellevue Galleria is owned by a company called Hallett.
Really?
It's not...
Not even one of the chains.
Not Lowe's or AMC or Cineplex Odeon or the other biggies in the area. So that was surprising. I get up there, 6 o'clock showing, $19 for me and my girlfriend. So that felt like I needed some Vaseline. I go in there. I'm 20 minutes before the show. I'm the only one in the theater.
Yep.
It gradually filled up to about 15 or 20 people,
yep.
Which was I was surprised. It was pretty empty. But the rest of the theater looked empty.
Yep.
They've got a weird lighting scheme in there. It's like this blue and pink neon.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's not a friendly environment.
Yeah, it's definitely a low-budget theater. For a high-budget area of Seattle, or the area.
The burbs. I mean, and everything else in that Galleria... Yeah. Seems troubled.
I know.
Like the tower left. There used to be an arcade up there that left.
Yeah.
There was boarded up stores. They're like, we're coming back soon. We're remodeling. And you just kind of have to wonder.
Well, it's weird. There's no central core. You're just climbing all over escalators to get to different businesses. Who goes to any of these things? It's like a poorly thought out.
Anyway.
But you know, that's where they have that, just down the street, that's where they have that new Lincoln,
and
whatever theater.
I haven't been there yet.
Apparently their theaters are incredible. That's where that guy...
Supposed to be really expensive.
Yeah, but apparently they're nice.
Anyway, the pre-show slideshow.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is possible. It's like they didn't use one of the big screen advertising companies. It's like they're doing it themselves.
Yep.
And so it's like a really cheap PowerPoint presentation.
Nice.
And worse than that, I mean, it's like random, you know, here's a tongue twister. Sally sells seashells by the seashore.
Wow.
Or, you know so you're wacky movie titles. What would an alternate title for this Vin Diesel movie be? The Quick and the Angry.
Oh, good Lord.
Not only that, the font is Comic Sans.
Oh, no. So and in other words, you're missing the 20 at 20.
You really are.
Yeah.
It was just so bad. I'm sorry, Comic Sans. We are font snobs.
Speaking of pre going to the movie, I don't know if it was this way when you saw it, but when I saw United 93, they made a point when they said sold those tickets, get in there right away because there'll be no there's going to be no previews before this movie, and I got the distinct impression that what they were saying was that this is such an important movie that other, you know, we didn't want to detract or we didn't want people to get upset or whatever. So, which is great, but that didn't mean no advertising before the movie and it didn't do anything else. So we were just I love trailers. I would have loved trailers, but so we had to sit through like a Coke ad and other stuff, but no trailers. It was the weirdest decision.
Which reminds me, when I saw Mission Impossible 3, they had a new Nacho Libre trailer, which I thought was a fantastic trailer. Cool. It was so much better than the previous teaser or trailer one or whatever.
Yep.
I mean, you really got into it and you really started to appreciate, this looks like a really good movie.
Cool.
It really looks like it's capturing Jack Black's style without going over the top. And the parts where it goes over the top involve the actual wrestling, which is over the top anyway.
Yep.
And the audience was into it.
Okay.
They were laughing. They were having a ball.
I hope it's a major success.
With Nacho Libre.
You know what? The major reason
one
of the reasons I want it to be a huge success is because Jack Black is still kind of an untested commodity. He's been in big movies, and he was in School of Rock, and he was in King Kong. But King Kong kind of underperformed. It wasn't about him. And School of Rock was a big success, but now he's got to, quote, parlay it. So if this thing is a big success, it means they're going to, when Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny
comes out,
they're going to promote the hell out of this thing because they know it's the new Jack Black vehicle. If Nacho Libre doesn't perform well, I think they're going to kind of bury Tenacious D.
Although, the Tenacious D movie, I wonder how much broad appeal that would actually have.
I don't know that it would or not, but I would like to at least give it the benefit by promoting it. And I think the only way that's going to happen is if Nacho Libre is really successful. Because at that point, it's not the movie, it's all about Jack Black. And even then, as you're pointing out, Tenacious D is not all about Jack Black. It's about much more than that. So who knows? I cannot wait for this movie. I'm just assuming and hoping it's brilliant.
June 16th.
Is that when it is? Wow. We're talking like a month from now. Holy jeez.
And it's, you know, and there are
so it's coming out right after Nacho Libre?
No, Nacho Libre is
June 16th. You were saying Tenacious D. Okay, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, Tenacious D is coming. Sorry. I think in like spring or like fall or something.
No idea.
So anyway, what's next on our list there, Chemo?
Well, you talked about the Poseidon budget. I guess Bryan Singer confirmed that the Superman budget was $250 million.
Holy God. $250 million.
How do you spend that much money?
Wow, that's...
How much does it cost to make the guy fly?
Jeez, you remember when they were first going to make this movie with... wasn't it like McGee or somebody?
Yeah.
And it was going to be in Australia, and they killed the whole project. First of all, can you imagine what a disaster and how horrible that would have been?
Now, hold on. I hate to prejudge things, but you're entirely right. That would have been a cluster.
I'm just thinking, what weird planet were we on when he was going to do it? But the whole thing that stopped it was that he refused to fly because he's scared of flying. Well,
really?
Yeah, that was the stated reason. And then you'd hear go, no,
you're
what's
John
the
John Madden? Okay,
well then
fine.
you're hearing these things that
it,
no,
but...
that's not the real reason. And apparently, no, that was the real reason. I'm thinking, put him on a steamer ship. It would
take steamer ship.
It might take a month. I mean, how much did they end up spending on this thing?
Oh,
anyway.
So that's an insane amount of money.
That's incredible.
And you know, they clearly are confident because of the iconic status of Superman that worldwide it will be a tremendous blockbuster.
Well, I can tell you, for me, there's zero chance I won't see it.
All right.
So it's one of those few properties out there. They're going, well, there's zero chance that a lot of people won't
and
see it.
$250 million.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Okay, there's really nothing else
to say
about that.
The weird thing to think about it though is that if it's a huge success and it does and it pulls in stuff like, you know, like Spider-Man 2 did when it came out, or like one of these Pixar movies, it has the capability of making that back in about a week and a half internationally.
And it's got to be almost all special effects and production. Because
I hope so.
It's got stars in it.
But not really.
Like Frank Langella and Kate Bosworth. I mean,
Kate Bosworth probably made
these,
$3 million for the movie. Frank Langella probably made $2 million for the movie. I mean,
Brandon Routh clearly isn't making doodly squat. So it's got to be all like... How much of that money is Superman's cape being digitized anyway?
Yep. And you would think that like people like Bryan Singer would have got like a back end deal for it.
Oh, I'd probably.
So that wouldn't cost that much up front. So yeah, they're pouring money in the movie. I hope it's great. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Since we're in this vein, did you want to talk about the new Miami Vice trailer?
Yeah, we saw it. And the only reason I saw it is because some Uber geek was dissonant on Ain't It Cool News, because it has all these cliched lines in the trailer. And yeah, they're cliched lines. And then he goes on to detail saying how...
I just saw it for the first time right before we started here.
And you tended to agree. There was some of them was kind of cliched, right?
Yes. And, you know, the one about treading was dumb, and the... I already forgot it.
There was some Eagles song, Take It to the Limit. He was like quoting the Eagles line.
Take It to the Limit. And you're, okay, that's dumb.
From my perspective, I looked at that trailer and I go, wow, that is exactly like what the Heat trailer looked like when it first came out.
I don't remember the Heat trailer.
Meaning he's got a rhythm to his language, and a lot of it is dumb cliches, but the minute you start watching these movies, you get completely and utterly into it. So I can't believe how these people are bad-mouthing a guy who has, with the exception of Ali, has had like an unbroken 20-year track record of great movies. And Ali wasn't a bad movie. I mean, how could somebody all of a sudden decide by that trailer, this is going to be the worst piece of crud ever? It made me kind of mad.
It sounded like the guy was really just bitching about the trailer itself. And he says, you know, contextually, maybe it all works in the movie and that's great. And he's worried. Now, I wouldn't care enough to write a whole thing about it.
Yeah.
I care enough apparently to talk about it on our podcast.
Just not put pen to paper.
But, you know, from the trailer itself, it's okay, but some of the dialogue sounded really corny.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, if you can pull lines out of man movies and create a crappy trailer out of a really good movie like Heat, I'm sure. And so I'm going to see Miami Vice. There's just no question about it.
It's hard to know about the dog, but the movie looks terrific. Whatever they show in those scenes, the guy's got an incredible visual style, and that movie, the trailer looks unbelievable. In a way that every movie he's done always looks unbelievable, but in a totally different way. So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. I thought you wanted to rip into this guy a little
more.
No,
that's it. That's it. Okay. Screw him. He's not worth my time.
Let me cross that off the list. What order do I want to do that? Let's talk about your Rolling Stone cover.
Oh yeah, the new Rolling Stone came out. It's the 1,000th issue of Rolling Stone. So Jan Wenner spent supposedly $1 million having this 3D thing coming out.
I wonder about it because there's a Target ad using the same thing on the back.
Well, it probably was like a way to sell it to make money by having a special ad. And it's funny because the Target ad, there's nothing special about it. You'd think they would have put a little bit of effort making it more 3D. But the front cover, it's sort of like the Sgt. Pepper's, only in 3D. And in fact, the most close reference is the Rolling Stones. After Sgt. Pepper's came out, they decided to do their own, and they had an album called Her Satanic Majesty's Request or something.
Yeah.
And it had a 3D cover that was so problematic that if you ever have one of these, you know, original albums, it's worth a ton. But anyway, they did a great job. I mean, I'm looking through it, and I'm thinking, wow, it's clear, and it's got like tons of levels of depth. It's like a really cool cover, and it's a great issue. It made me remember how great this magazine's been for such a very long time.
It's interesting. It's, you know, gimmick covers. Comic books did gimmick covers for a period that was the speculator period in the early 90s.
Yep.
And you know, it was just such a blatant, here's an issue of X-Men with a glow in the dark cover
or a holograph or
you know, some, you know, something wacky like this that's 3D and it costs $4, but it's, you know, buy it because it's going to be worth $50 next week. And they just, and people bought this crap.
Yeah.
Because it was this speculator boom with all these people sort of got into comics thinking it was an investment.
And now 45 million people have these in mint condition and plastic, and they're worth less than they paid for them.
Yeah, they're worth nothing. So I see a gimmick cover like that, and I just sort of have a gut negative reaction.
Yeah.
Although, clearly they're not doing this.
You get the distinct impression he did it. He doesn't care if somebody's saving it or not. He did it just for... because it would be cool and fun to put all his friends in there.
I agree. So I'm not saying it's not cool. I'm just explaining my instinctual reaction. And then as I'm flipping through this Rolling Stone, there's an ad in here, a full page, flying Superman with the milk mustache.
Oh, God.
Got milk. And it's in terms of it being a Superman picture, it's one of the better Superman still shots, ironically enough.
Yeah.
But the marketing... Oh, I guess that's how they're offsetting the $250 billion budget.
Yeah.
Product placement is just, Oh.
Yeah, it'd be a little bit over.
So bad.
Did I tell you about when I was in Germany last time and they had a Got Milk ad? Well, apparently the National Dairy Board of Germany has different ideas than the National Dairy Board of America, whoever's putting out these stupid milk ads, the Milk Council. Over there, it says Got Milk, so it says Get Milka or whatever, however you say milk. But it's a picture of a kid, about 12 years old. She's smiling. She doesn't have a milk mustache, but she's showing the milk on her tongue. And I swear to God, it looks like equal parts Got Milk ad and child pornography.
Oh, dear.
I kid you not. They don't have milk mustaches. They have milk tongues over there. And there's no other way to look at it other than some horrible sexual thing. Unbelievable. Okay. So when seeing those things, I'm looking at these ones over here and I go, yeah, maybe the Got Milk ads over here aren't so bad after all.
Well, it's funny. If you look at stuff like in movie product placement, you can do it well and you can do it not well.
Yeah.
I remember listening to the commentary for Fight Club, and Finch was talking about, yeah, Pepsi gave us a whole bunch of, like it was Mountain Dew machines or something that, you know, that was the studio said, I can't remember if the studio made them do it, but, you know, you get money if you put the product in the movie.
Yeah.
That's, I don't really need to explain that. And so Fincher said, yeah, so basically I decided every time that you saw a Mountain Dew machine, something horrible was happening. And it was like when they were threatening the 7-Eleven owner, and it's like down back behind the place, and he's down on his knees, and there's the gun to his head. Well, there's a Mountain Dew machine.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's actually a pretty funny way to do it. You're kind of subverting it. So I was fine with that, because I didn't even notice it. When I don't notice it, I'm fine with it. Which I guess is even more insidious.
Well, you know, but what's interesting? I don't know. You don't watch The Sopranos, but on The Sopranos this last week, the son in The Sopranos worked at Blockbuster, and they made a point about his job at Blockbuster, and him and his buddies in Blockbuster are horrible employees who treated the customers horribly. And I'm thinking, I'm trying to figure out, did Blockbuster sign off on this? And then also. Somebody, Tony Soprano owns this building, and this hot real estate agent offers money for this building because she wants to put a Jamba Juice in there. So essentially, the Soprano offer enough money, and he puts all these people out of business so Jamba Juice can move in. And I couldn't help but thinking, wow, did they really sign off on that? It was bizarre. I mean, the one we talked about it several months ago, but that Black Sunday when they had A, the Super Bowl, and B, the Goodyear blimp. And the blimp was going to kill 50,000 people.
Yeah.
That was like the most incredible product placement. But to some extent, I started to think, yeah, honestly, they're treating it as real life. Jamba Juice is clearly not the bad guy in this situation. They're just representative of a big company that moves into these areas. But I don't know. I didn't know whether they had signed off. I assume in this market, if you hear the words Jamba Juice, somebody has said yes. Somebody's approved, even if they didn't get money for it. Although I know you don't listen to the Simpsons commentary DVDs, but
well, just I will.
When you borrow the DVDs, anyway, when they talk about it, they mention continually about their efforts at product placement and how they have never asked for it, but they've put products in there and they've never ever gotten any freebies because of them. They even sat down and sang the entire Oscar Mayer Wiener song. They've sang Chicken yeah, Tonight. That. I've got Chicken Tonight. All these things, and they're saying nothing. And apparently, I can't remember what the product was, but there was some lame product they mentioned that somebody actually sent them a box of them. But they couldn't believe it. That Oscar Mayer Wiener one has been replayed hundreds of times on TVs across the land, and they get nothing for it. which is good. Because that's the best kind. When they're doing it as a joke, not to make money, and that's the best kind, because they would never do it for money.
To me, the most blatant one was The Island, in terms of product placement, where you're being smacked in the face with so many things.
Yep.
Like, you know, I think it was Puma sneakers and whatever kind of bottled water it was. And the MSN search phone booth. And it really took me out of the movie. It was so bad.
Yep.
And I can remember one of the first times that was really talked about was, it was one of the Pierce Brosnan Bond films. I can't remember if it was, No, it was tomorrow.
The world's not enough. The tomorrow's not a world.
Tomorrow never dies. Was that it?
What a horrible name. Yeah, just random. They just throw it in a little random really name generator. Too.
But I remember they're talking about how they were going to do a lot of product placement there. It was like a Nokia phone and the brand of vodka was like.
Well, they've always done it with Aston Martin and other stuff.
No, it was wasn't Stoli. Whatever, it doesn't matter what the martini ingredients were.
Yep.
And there was a razor. But you never really cared if it was Aston Martin because that was part of the that's been so ingrained for so long.
But originally it was even though it was different back then, it was undoubtedly product placement even back in the early 60s. But we've just accepted that.
I don't know if that was the case. I don't know if that was the reason for him driving an Aston Martin back then.
Really?
Maybe it was, but I'm going to be naive enough to think maybe it was just the writers thought that was a cool car.
It's a British car.
And what the secret agent would drive.
Which one of them? Didn't they actually replace with a BMW? Like?
Oh, yeah. The GoldenEye. Yeah. It was a BMW. What's the Roadster?
Whatever. Oh, the M3 or...
No, it wasn't an M3. It was Z?
Z3. Series?
Z? I think that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was... And then, so they did BMW for a couple of films, and then they went back to Aston Martin for the last one. The good Lord, you're right. All the titles are so retarded.
Random blonde name generator. That's what they need to put it in the computer.
The one with Halle Berry. Whatever.
I don't know. Who knows?
We don't need to spend the podcast trying to think of the last title for the last Bond film. But I was watching I had to order some DVDs, so I ordered the Thomas Crown Affair.
Mm-hmm.
That movie. The Pierce Brosnan movie.
John McTiernan.
And there was a really blatant Pepsi One product placement where Rene Russo goes to a vending machine in the cop police station and chugs a Pepsi One. There's the logo.
Conveniently located.
And that jumped out at me. I was like, ew.
Yeah.
But that aside, it's a fantastic movie.
You know, the worst one in history.
Except for the ending. I hated the ending in the airplane when she crawls over the seat into his lap. I hated that. That movie... That a much better ending would have been to have stopped it when she gets stood up at the heliport.
Yeah. Well, needless to say, it was a very well done movie.
But yeah, it was.
It's one of those. It was like a romantic adventure. You don't see that stuff ever. And when they do it well, it's like, wow. And why don't you see more of that?
And they're trying to.
And it was definitely an adult movie too, which was kind of cool too.
Yeah, and Rene Russo. Hey, do you remember that dress that she was dancing in?
Vaguely, yeah.
Oh, you need to see it again,
my friend. I haven't seen it since it came out.
Props to Rene Russo, because she wears a dress that you can see everything.
Nice.
And then, of course, there's the bits later on the Caribbean island where you do see everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much, Rene Russo. That was delightful.
Well,
but no, they're prepping a sequel.
Oh, really? The Thomas Crown Affair? Wow.
And what strikes me about that, and sort of you can get into a larger discussion about sequels, is how do you make a sequel to the Thomas Crown Affair? Because part of what made that movie so great is this tension between the two characters.
Yeah.
Of, you know, she's trying to catch him, but they're sleeping together, and there's this incredible chemistry, and it works really, really well. So you do a sequel. What do you do? Are they broken up, and he has to win her back, so you're basically replaying the first movie?
Yeah.
Do you pretend she doesn't exist, which is what a lot of...
Or do you eliminate her and come up with a new thing? And
well, that's what I mean. Pretend she doesn't exist and there's some new chick. Like, you know, Mission Impossible, every movie there's some new chick.
Yeah.
Or, you know, certainly Bond, although nobody's complaining about that with Bond films, that he's not with the same chick. You know, Indiana Jones, new chick every movie. And all of these sequels do the same thing with these disposable women, which is just really disgusting when you think about it. But, you know, we'll get hot young actress to put a few butts in the seats.
Yeah.
But you look at the Thomas Crown Affair, and really, how do you do it? You know, maybe they team up and they do some caper.
Yeah.
But then which might be a great movie in and of itself, but you don't have that chemistry anymore, that tension.
Yeah, I mean, I love the first movie, but I would be go into any sequel with serious trepidation. Because it's like, unless it's some random thing, you might as well just... And why don't you just write a random movie with Pierce Brosnan that's cool and not even connected to the first one?
It's so difficult because you don't want to remake the first movie, which is what a lot of sequels end up doing anyway. Yeah. Men in Black 2.
Ugh.
I don't know where I pulled that from. Ghostbusters 2. But yeah, a lot of the... It's just, you know, let's...
Godfather 2. Oh, no, not that.
Well, no, there's an exit. Well, Godfather lent itself a little better to a sequel because you could do so many different things that weren't necessarily a repeat of the first.
Well, yeah, exactly. They knew there was a bunch of stories that were in the book they hadn't told, so it lent it to this new structure where let's go further and go more in time, and then let's go back in time, and it ended up being beautiful, and it ended up being as clearly as good or better than the first movie. Hey, speaking of product placement, have you ever seen a movie that came out in the mid-80s called Mac and Me?
I remember it.
It's one of the worst movies ever made.
Because it's like a kid,
it's
right?
A kid movie about a kid that discovers this alien. It's like this weird, horrible ripoff of E.T., but it's perhaps the most blatant product placement in the history of movies. McDonald's must have sponsored this movie in some way to a huge degree. Because the movie takes place, like, totally, it seems to me, in my recollection, in McDonald's. He names the alien Mac after a Big Mac, and the thing that rejuvenates
him,
it's not Elliot's love or the heartbeat, it's like Big Macs that rejuvenate this guy. It is so, the effects were horrible, and it was a horrible movie, but it was so bad, so awful, and it was all revolving around Big Macs and McDonald's, and I swear, even if you were like 3 years old watching this movie.
I loved Big Macs when I was younger, I admit it.
Well,
and
that's what they were trying to do. They're going for like the 10-year-old audience, you know. It was, it was painful, painful, horrible effects. It looks like they did enough, they spent just enough to have a certified movie. It's a real movie, but nothing more, and to get every reference you could put in there. And I don't know if you noticed that, but there's a new movie out that Starbucks funded. Have you seen that movie? Aquila and
the Bee?
And I don't think it has anything really to do with Starbucks.
No,
But so they've just funded it. It's got good reviews, and I'm trying to figure out, what's Starbucks doing? What's going on there?
You know, Starbucks is really, really weird in terms of what they're trying to do media-wise, because what they've been in music for a while.
Yep.
Where they've been selling CDs out of Starbucks.
Yep.
To the point where they've had exclusive CDs.
Yep.
Like they had an Alanis Morissette disc, which I can't remember if it was exclusive or it just started selling.
No,
there
it was exclusive because I haven't seen it else. Or maybe it's now elsewhere.
I think it might have been a delayed release.
That was
release
the Unplugged Jagged Little Pill one, right?
Yeah, I think that's it. Yep. And then I think they had like a Dylan collection that was exclusive to them.
Yep.
And now they got this thing where you can burn your own CDs in a Starbucks. So they've really been trying to do a lot of multimedia stuff.
Yep.
And so now with this movie, it's like they're trying to branch out. And you have to wonder, is it just diversification?
But I don't get it. So are they marketing it in Starbucks or what? What's...
Maybe. I don't drink coffee, so I'm never in a Starbucks, so I don't know.
Well, the way they're describing it, it sounds like a Starbucks kind of movie. It's like a slightly arty but a little bit mainstream. It's about some girl who's at a spelling bee. I mean, it strikes me.
I imagine they're marketing it. Why have these gazillion retail locations if you're not going to
exactly
use them?
Exactly, but
since
I never go into Starbucks, I just don't know.
But you're right. I hear it's a pretty good movie.
I may be seeing it today. Oh, actually, not today. Well, I may be seeing it in a week.
Okay, well, there we
go.
I'll
tell you if it's good or not.
But it's really interesting to see because it's a pretty random. I mean, Starbucks has done media stuff like the music in the past, but, you know, it's sort of like, you know, General Motors saying, oh, hey, we're making a movie.
Yeah.
Okay, don't you make cars? Don't you make crappy cars that nobody buys?
Exactly. Ruby, lie down, dog.
That makes me want to go off completely tangentially here for a moment. When we were in Hawaii a couple weeks ago, rental, you know, just rental cars everywhere.
Yep.
Fleets of them.
Yep.
And when we were renting our car, turns out what we were going to get was a Chevy Malibu,
yep.
Which I loathe.
Yep.
I loathe the Malibu because a few times we've had to rent a car, it's been a Malibu, and it's just an embarrassment. And when they first started making the Malibu, it was the car you knew America could build.
Yep.
That was the literal advertising slogan because it was supposed to be equivalent to the Accord or the Camry, when of course it was a piece of crap.
Absolutely.
Just garbage. And so we were... You know, most of my friends that were on this trip are incredible car snobs, like
just,
myself.
Just to forewarn you, Matt, we did have a little bit of this discussion last week.
On the podcast?
On the podcast.
We did?
We absolutely did.
No, we didn't. We talked about it beforehand.
Didn't we? Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead. So, I digress. I apologize.
And so somebody came up with the phrase. What the phrase should have been was Malibu, F yeah, in the Team America World Police vein.
Yes.
and so every time we
Malibu,
as we're driving around,
F yeah. yeah.
Every time we were driving around Kauai and we saw one of those, yeah. And then, or the Malibu Max with an extra X, M A X X, Max. Oh, it was so bad. And I had to, for my job last week, I had to post a PowerPoint presentation. It literally was extreme training.
Oh no.
That was in the first slide. And,
oh no.
Oh, it was one of my more depressing moments at work. Sweet. Anyway,
yeah, I tried to avoid jobs that crush my soul.
My job doesn't crush my soul, but that instant
was a little soul.
It was a
little
soul,
piece of soul crushing.
Anyway, here's a random news blurb I saw. Apparently in... Your dog's getting a little friendly.
Ruby, move.
It's okay. Apparently in the last investors call for Apple, mm-hmm. somebody asked Steve Jobs what his intentions were with Disney. Are you going to go take over Disney? And he said no. He's quite content to run Apple and be a Disney board member. You know, implying that he's plenty busy with everything he's doing with Apple, which I thought was interesting because we had talked about that a long time ago when the deal was first announced and what that meant for Disney and would Jobs take over? How much of an effect would you see? And I'm a little disappointed, actually. I would like to see more Jobs involvement in Disney.
But Disney's doing pretty well right now. So Jobs would much rather come in when Disney's doing poorly anyway. Why take over a ship that's doing pretty well and make it do pretty well?
That's a very good point. You're right, because it's Iger and not Eisner.
Yep.
And if it was Eisner, I think he'd be, well, it would never would have happened. Well, I don't know. I don't want to get into that. But, yeah.
Plus, and if it's doing poorly, it gives him the credibility and the ability to be able to make massive changes. It's like, oh my God, we're doing poorly, but we got this guy on the board and he saved something else. And he goes, no, I don't want it. No, but you got to come take it over. It's too important. And then finally he goes, okay, I'm coming in and I run the ship. People forget he doesn't own Apple. He's theoretically beholden. I mean, he's a huge stakeholder, but he's beholden to the shareholders, but they give him as wide a berth as you can possibly imagine.
He literally saved the
company. Well, he did. And that's what I'm saying. And in Disney, to get that kind of wide berth, he absolutely... Hang on. Ruby, come
here.
That's
okay. I'm just pushing him off the
camera. He absolutely... My stupid dog. He absolutely needs that kind of wide berth. I think that Disney needs to screw up a bit before he would go
we'll
take
see.
It apart.
We'll see. I mean, the other thing about Jobs is everyone says the guy is just a complete jackass.
Yeah, he's hard to work for.
Very hard to work for. And he gets away with it at Apple because he's got such a great track record. And
my dog's about to knock over every DVD I have.
Okay, Mr. Exaggerator.
Well, I mean a lot of them.
Anyway.
By the way, 935. That's where I'm at right now.
Okay.
935.
Okay. Anyway, I'm not sure if Jobs' style would go over quite as well at Disney.
Yeah.
You know, Apple, it's... You know, people are used to it, and that's the way
it's
always been.
It's his baby, and he created it.
And so for him to come into Disney and suddenly start being a jackass, it may not work.
Yeah.
Anyway, we want to briefly go over the top 10 movies. Was this weekend?
This is today, as of this weekend.
Okay, so Mission Impossible 3, number one position.
Stayed at number one, and it's up to like 70 million so far right now. So not doing as bad as people are saying, but... Poseidon number two, 20 million, has got to be like the biggest disappointment on the planet.
Well,
Earth.
Wells pointed out that was probably the high end of what it could make this weekend based on the tracking and what he had heard.
Well, that's right, which is like, if I was running that movie company, I'd be going, oh, God, what
and
a bath we're taking.
It's really, and you think about it, and it's not just, because when you get into the summer, you're looking at everything else that's going on. Like, what opens next week? Is it X-Men or is it something else?
No, it's I can't.
Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, Da Vinci Code.
Oh my! And let's talk about the marketing onslaught.
Jesus Christ.
That is the.
I don't
Da Vinci
even watch
Code.
TV, and I feel like I'm being beaten to a pulp by
you.
That
really,
movie.
It's insane the marketing budget for this movie.
Yeah.
And honestly, why?
Because
everyone in the country has read the damn book.
Yeah, 40 million people have read the book.
People,
or more.
I mean, I would think a standard campaign would have given you enough awareness that you didn't need to
Yeah.
To spend this much money.
It's weird. It's like as big of a movie as I've heard in a very long time.
And what's interesting is I'll see it, but I don't feel like I need to see it first weekend.
You know, I've gotten to the point now where if I don't see it first weekend, I tend to like never see it.
It
so
harder,
I'm getting this feeling that I'm, as much as I'm interested in this, it's going to be a DVD that I watch.
And so, but I mean, that's what I'm looking at is you're looking at Poseidon opening this weekend, but then next weekend is, you know, is Da Vinci Code. Weekend after that is X-Men.
Yep.
And so if you don't, you know, you only have one weekend to yourself before everyone else starts crowding in.
Yeah.
And it's just, you feel bad for it because it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Poseidon. But, yeah. Mission Impossible. It's probably the same kinds of people that want to see Poseidon see Mission Impossible. Probably.
Third place, RV.
RV. Still.
Which was number one, what, 2 weeks ago before Mission Impossible opened?
Yep.
How the hell did that happen?
Because there was nothing else opening. It didn't take much to
maybe
be number
stay
one.
Stay home, people.
It didn't take much to be number one, but, you know, that's a movie where they pointedly, the suit said, they took some people that had been major successes in the past, and, hey, Ruby, come here. They took some people who had been major successes in the past and had not done as well that kind of needed to prove that they could deliver, but not with a lot of money. So they spent $50 million on a movie that, for whatever reason, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, probably would have been $100 million. They had Robin Williams. They had Barry Sonnenfeld direct it, but they did it for $50 million, and the movie definitely will make a profit. It's already made $45 million.
I don't think it would have been $100 million.
One of those stupid movies. I'm looking at what Adam Sandler Longest Yard. How did that movie cost $125 million?
It did.
Yes. How does every Adam Sandler movie cost $90 million?
Okay, well, you got me there.
Because they just blowed him up because of the stars and everything else. So here was a movie that, well, you know, everybody's going to demand a bunch and it's premium. And then all of a sudden, in this particular case, they said, nope, you got $50 million. That includes your star, that includes the director, includes everybody. Make your little movie and do it. And now it's definitely going to be a profit. And I think you're going to see, you know, more of those as stars finally go, you know.
Hey, you know what I'm looking forward to?
What's that?
RV2.
It's clearly going to be in the works.
I hope that opens up the same time as Cheaper by the Dozen 3.
Cheaper by the Dozen.
Or Yours, Mine, and Ours 2.
I'm surprised since Dozen is in the title, they haven't come up with some dumb, weird
13.
Nomenclature. Yeah, or something stupid like that.
Baker's Dozen.
Yeah.
That would really be retarded,
that would be
wouldn't
awful.
It?
That would be.
Just My Luck opens fourth. I hadn't heard anything about this until my girlfriend and I go to the mall this week, and we're walking into the food court, and every single door had a little transparent Just My Luck clingy thing on it. And I was like, what the hell is this? Clearly it's not aimed at me.
Well, it's funny is, you know,
it's a Lindsay Lohan movie.
Lindsay Lohan has been promoting this thing, but she's such a train wreck. And I don't know if you saw this, and I actually saw this when it was on. She was on the Today Show this week. And so she's on it. Matt Lauer's interviewing her, and she just looks, I hate to say it, but she looks coked out of her mind. She just looks totally out of it. And then I saw some of the gossip sites, and they showed the outfit that she was wearing on that show. She had been wearing the night before at some other events. And it's pretty clear she never went to bed that night, and she just showed up messed up at the Today Show experience. This gal is totally messed up. And I heard this story a couple weeks ago saying, you know, when she was on the, she hosted Saturday Night Live again, third time in 2 years. So she did it a year later and a year after that. So she hosted again. And apparently Lorne Michaels, as they were talking about this, I think they were talking about on the Howard Stern Show, they're saying apparently they had an intervention for Lindsay Lohan. I'm going, dude, we heard about that. That happened after, you know, her second appearance. Why are they talking about this old stuff? Apparently they decided to have another intervention for Lindsay Lohan. After her second appearance, a bunch of the cast members got together and explained to her how she's messing up her life. And then after her third appearance, they did it again. You know, nothing is going to help this gal.
There's a joke, I think, from Kathleen Madigan. It's like, you know, if you peak that early in life, I think she's talking about a gymnast. Yeah. Like when you're a gold medal winning gymnast at 12 years old or whatever, or a child star or whatever, why not just skip the middleman and inject the heroin directly into your eyeball? Because it's going to happen sooner or later.
Yeah. I feel bad because she's clearly a talented person. If you've ever seen, you know, Freaky Friday and Mean Girls. She's like legitimately talented, and maybe she's good in this movie. I'm looking forward to seeing in this other movie, but on a personal level, she's a complete and utter mess, and you feel bad for that.
Anyway, American Haunting number 5. Who cares?
Who gives a crap? What is that?
United 93 number 6.
So it's made $25 million bucks, so it's already made a profit, which is cool.
That is good.
Good movie.
Yeah, you kind of wish it had done better, but I wish it had done better, but
yeah, but it's like not a pleasant experience to go through. So you're only, I mean, to a certain extent, when people ask me, "Do you see my?" I go, "Yeah, it was a great movie." But you feel inclined to tell them that, but it's not something you enjoy. And if you hear enough of that, well, yeah, I don't want to. It's like medicine, you know, to some extent.
Stick it.
You know, honestly,
apparently it's a gymnastic movie.
I loved Bring It On. I thought Bring It On was a very well done movie, and this was by the same person, only in the gymnastics vein. But from what I understand, it's just dreadfully awful.
Okay.
So.
Ice Age 2, The Meltdown. You know, and I was interested in this just on the preview. I was interested. I wasn't a definite. And then I just dropped off.
I never saw it first, and I'm not interested at all. But this movie's already made a mint. It's, even though it's already dropped, it's made like way over $100 million. It made like $70 million bucks the first weekend or some crazy amount. So
Silent Hill number 9.
Who cares? Although I'll tell you, the first preview looked great, but it's apparently like
video game movie, and it's funny because Harry Knowles just really liked it, and he was like the only one.
Ebert said that it looked fantastic. That's what I like about Ebert. He's not going to diss a movie if there's elements. And he said this movie is beautiful. It's just stupid. But if you're looking at it for looks, I mean, it's definitely got it.
Flipping around the TV last night, I came across on I was on the Science Fiction Channel, which they've got this weird, one of their weird business models is to make these made for sci-fi movies that look like crap.
Yeah.
You really have to wonder how they make any money at all with these things.
Yep.
But that's not what was on. What was on was worse. It was House of the Dead.
I don't remember House of the Dead. That's a video game.
It's a video game movie. I think it was Uwe Boll.
Oh, our man.
The game itself is pretty monotonous. It's, you know, you have a gun or a shotgun and you kill zombies and that's it.
It's our world's least favorite German since Adolf Hitler.
And I'm, whoa.
Is there other Germans that we hate?
You're pulling a Hitler belt?
No. It's not connecting to.
You know what?
Saying,
I'm skipping over you. Okay,
I'm saying the Americans just don't like the guy. They didn't like Hitler. They don't like this guy. I could have said Goebbels.
I would have gone with that.
Okay.
So it's just watching this movie. It was so bad. It was so bad.
And why was it bad?
Because it's got the same quality as a made for sci-fi movie. It's just, you know, the 2 minutes of acting we saw were horrendous. It wasn't scary at all. The effects were horrendous. There's got this chick in this American leotard, the American flag leotard, that, and it's kind of like doing Matrix bullet time where she's high kicking a zombie, and it's just, it looks so low rent. It looks so student project.
That's what I,
and yet it was released theatrically.
Well, that's what I feel bad. Like, I always fancy myself, you know, in a different world, I might be able to be, I would like to be in films and be producing or something. And then sometimes I look at a movie that is clearly bad, and sometimes I go, but I'm not sure if I was making a movie, would be able to recognize that it's an American, you know, it's House of the Dead versus, you know, Science of the Lambs. I'm not sure that I would be able to necessarily recognize that, because you can see talented people to some extent are making these, but the combined effect is just absolutely dreadfully awful. So I don't know. I mean, I feel bad when I hear about that. Sometimes you just know, and you'll hear people on the crew saying this is terrible, but then sometimes they don't even know. There's famous movies like Tootsie and others that everybody thought it was a disaster when they were making it, and it ended up being obviously brilliant. So you never know.
Or you look at something like, on the other side of that would be League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, you've got reports where Connery and the director are practically, you know, fighting, you know, hitting each other.
Yeah.
It gets so bad. And that movie, oh, that was such a disappointment, because that graphic novel, the comic book series it was based on, was so good. And they just, that movie was, in every way that the comic book was good, this movie was bad. Well, it was the 180-degree opposite.
According, I was hearing Artie Lang, who's on the Howard Stern show, and he was talking about being in Mystery Men. And I must be the
was
only
person.
Yeah, he was in the first 3 minutes he got killed. He was like some guy.
Was he one of the red glasses?
I don't know. He was some guy in some China shop or something, or some shop in the
beginning.
Well,
the opening of Mystery, I didn't like the opening of Mystery Men. And I'm happy it's sort of, because it was basically, it's this old folks home dance.
Yeah.
And then like the bad guys crash in, yeah, and they're stealing all the jewelry, and then the Mystery Men show up, and
he's one of the bad guys.
Okay.
So he got killed in the first 3 minutes. Now, I liked Mystery Men. I actually would say I liked it a lot.
As did
And
I thought it was really good.
But apparently, while they were making it, it wasn't. They were, as Artie Lang was saying, he's saying it was weird. You know, they were filming this movie, and they had like all these cinematographers that were all, you know, all had their different visions, and they were saying that. And there was William H. Macy and Ben Stiller, and they were arguing creatively with the director all the time, which was he said that was kind of weird to watch. And he said that, you know, he said that. You know, Artie Lang said Ben Stiller used to say the best three things that were the best line about the movie. Artie Lang would say, "Well, yeah, I was in Mystery Men. I got killed in the first 3 minutes." And Ben Stiller goes, "I wish I had gotten killed in the first 3 minutes of that movie."
Oh.
Because he liked it. And I thought, damn, I like that. It may have been for some reason some kind of a misfire, but I love the concept. I loved how it worked.
And I thought it was pretty well executed. There are parts of it that didn't work, but by and large.
And he describes it as a disaster because Artie Lang says it's the one big movie I've been on. They spent $70 million on this movie. And then he says, and it topped out at like 45. And I'm thinking, that's not a flop. That means that it probably made a bunch overseas. It probably made DVDs, and it probably is a profitable movie. Anyway, apparently it's regarded by Ben Stiller and all these other people as some disaster. And the director has never worked again either.
Well,
so
he was
a commercial director.
I remember he was a commercial or a video director. Yeah. I remember it was one of the two.
Somebody had to resurrect that movie because I thought it was funny. I thought it was clever. I thought it was good.
Oh, it was great. Mr. Furious?
Yeah, exactly.
The Shoveler? Come on.
The Shoveler. Anyway, we're at a minute 6.
A minute six?
I mean, an hour 6.
Okay. Well, just to round out our list here, top 10 movie, 10th top movie is Hoot.
Oh, Hoot.
Kids movie.
It's a kids movie with a message. I hate kids' movies, messages. I hated Free Willy. I hated all that stuff.
I never saw Free Willy.
Ugh. And they went all the way to have Free Willy 3. How many times can they Free Willy, for God's sake?
So having not seen the first, I couldn't tell you if it was plausible that by the third they still needed to free him.
And any movie that, you know, causes, you release it here, it's sort of like the Wii, the Nintendo Wii. Over in England, they just could not stop snickering over the title Free Willy.
Oh.
but anyway, so Hoot, it's about them saving, I think, some kind of spotted owl or something. And
well, hold on now. Free Willy and its sequels give rise to the South Park Free Willy.
Oh, I don't remember
which
the
is
South
all good.
Park Free Willy.
Oh, it was from the latest season. They they go to the equivalent, like the North Denver SeaWorld or North Park SeaWorld.
Oh, yeah,
whatever.
I did see that.
And
that's pretty funny.
The announcers of the whale show are screwing with the kids, yeah, and they make the kids think that the whale is talking to them and that the whale wants to get home to the moon where it races.
Yeah.
And the kids end up launching the whale with the Mexican space program.
No, it kept going to different ones. They call Russia, it's $20 million, and they call the Mexico, and it's like $150 million? $150. It was so funny.
It was so funny.
The only thing I didn't like was they had the animal rights people were the ALF, which are terrorists that wouldn't be on TV. They should have picked PETA or somebody. But anyway, it was still very funny.
Well, I think they probably felt they went to the PETA well. With
yeah, they
the,
probably
uh,
hit that one too
when,
many times.
When Stan was banished. I can't remember if it was Stan or Kyle was banished and ended up at the PETA compound where they were, the PETA people were married to animals and God. Oh, that was disturbing
anyway,
on
was,
so many levels.
Funny. It's just, it's awesome. This is their 10th season, although a season is a loose term for those guys. But 10th season, and it's just as good as it's ever been. There's a few hits, few misses, but when it's hitting, it is brilliant. Man, that damn Family Guy, the manatee thing, I think is probably my favorite thing right now of all time on South Park, moving the balls from this side of the tank to the other. So I love that show.
I think the Towley episode is still fun.
Towley was Towley. I don't know, but
that concept of, I mean, they nail it at the end. I mean, yeah, the very last line of the show. Oh, Towley, you're the worst character ever. I know. But just the whole, oh, God, I love Tally.
I know.
All right, this is, we're becoming ridiculous. So we should probably wrap it on up. Yep. I will say, before we officially wrap up, comments about Mustard Aionaise can be sent to youguysrock@mustardaionaise.com. Now, we haven't actually read any emails because the last three episodes haven't been posted
yet, that's my fault.
A variety of reasons.
No, the last two episodes.
Including this one, three. I'm going to go ahead and include this one.
I can guarantee you they'll be posted today.
Wow.
Because okay. I have time on my hands. Okay. And I have your disc that you brought.
It's hard for me to come down on you when you're the one doing most of the work.
I know.
So, youguysrock@mustardaionaise.com. Oh, we did. Well, before we go away, do you want to talk about your movies on the
Oh, I got some new movies. I got Delicatessen for the longest time.
What is that? What Delicatessen?
This is the first movie by Jean, or by
Oh, is
Genet.
It the French dude?
Yeah, the guy who directed Amelie and City of Lost Children and the
Alien Resurrection.
Alien
and,
Resurrection.
What was, oh God.
Oh,
what
and then
the
one with Amelie gal, the most, no, the unfortunate.
Well, very long engagement.
Yeah, very long engagement.
But no, I'm thinking of, God, what's the one where they're all in the building and they have to, they keep eating. Is that what
this That's this. Of? That's this.
They keep eating the, is it really?
Yeah, that's Delicatessen. Yeah, this is
oh,
the
you're
first
right.
movie. And it's,
okay, yeah, I have seen this.
And it's like finally out on DVD, and it's got a commentary from the director, which is cool. And so I'm excited about that. I also got Wonder Shows on a DVD, and I got, I got Near Dark. I found Near Dark.
What's that?
Near Dark is, it came out 20 years ago. It's a vampire flick. Oh, that man. Has Bill Paxton and others in it.
Pray
it's
for
it's like really kind of pretty good, and it's like a big special edition that was fun.
Lance Henriksen.
Yeah, he's great. He's kind of the dad of the vampire clan. And then they have and then I got True Romance, which is,
I love that movie. I haven't seen it in a while.
It's a great movie. I'd totally forgotten some of the favorite scenes written by Quentin Tarantino, but it's one of those early special editions where they tried to throw out all the stops, and they don't even seem to do this anymore. It's like, you remember how great Fight Club special edition was and other stuff? Seven. Well, this is like that. It has three commentary tracks, Quentin Tarantino commentary track, a Tony Scott commentary track, and a... but oh, it's so funny to hear Quentin Tarantino, because I love the guy, but at one point, he actually... needs to stop and say, I just need to stop, and this is probably the best written scene of all time. Mind you, it's a scene that he wrote, and he's like dead serious where he needs to stop and honor how beautiful this scene is.
Which scene was it?
It was, I mean, there was a couple of them, but I think the one he was referring to is the famous scene where the main character's dad, played by Dennis Hopper,
is talking
to Christopher Walken about how black people intermarried people and how Sicilians, why they have dark hair because of the N-word in this. And it's a funny, brilliant scene, but he was so proud of it and so incapable of, you know, I mean, the thing is, the difference between him and like M. McGee, who's comparing his work to Godfather, is Tarantino backs it up. He's a brilliant director. But anyway, it's just kind of funny. And I haven't got through the other commentary acts, but I was so excited to see it because you don't find it anymore. It came out like 6 years ago, the DVD, and I found it used for like $10. And I was like really excited to see it. So anyway, those are my collection for this week. I'm now up to 935 at this pace. I should break the grand probably by the end of this year.
And we'll have a special memorial party. Episode. God, I need to see that again. Brad Pitt is the stoner
Brad
guy.
Brad Pitt, he is so good at it.
Pick up some cleaning products.
Yeah, Brad Pitt is great. It's like, wow, Brad Pitt, before you knew who Brad Pitt was, it was like movie came out like 93. So
the guy's just a good actor. Yeah. Okay, so having interrupted the going away with Richard's recent DVD acquisitions, I already gave the email address. I'm not going to do that again.
Cool.
In fact, I had something really funny I was going to say signing off, and now I don't remember what it was.
Maybe it wasn't so funny.
I really think it was. I remember thinking that would be really funny to sign off with, and I got nothing now.
Damn. Okay, well, we'll just sign off. I am Richard.
I am Matt.
And we'll see you at the movies.
Oh, my God. No. No, 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 no. Say something else. I can't let that stand.
Oh, let me think.
Oh, I remember now. Okay, you say you're Richard.
I am Richard.
And I'm Matt Malibu.
Yeah.
Yeah.